Hi, welcome to Muqaddima. My name is Siavish. The years between 1837 and 1901 are commonly known as the Victorian era, named after the Queen of the British Empire during these years, Queen Victoria. The reign of Queen Victoria was a transitory period for much of the world. In many ways, the world was moving from the pre-modern into the modern era. A large number of the geopolitical events that occurred in the 20th and even the 21st century can be traced back to this period. However, for this video, our focus will be only on the Islamic world and how it changed in the 64-year reign of Queen Victoria of the Great Britain. For this video, I have partnered with Paradox Interactive to tell you about their latest game, Victoria 3, which was released just 3 days ago on the 25th. If you like games such as Crusader Kings or Europa Universalis, I'm sure you'll enjoy Victoria 3 as well. With a real history from 1836 to 1936 as your playground, you can choose one of over 100 countries to play as. Its complex systems have you focusing on your state's society and economy. You have to manage relationships with other countries and empires, but also hold various factions of your own country together while trying to expand your production and economy. As soon as I started the game, I tried to play as the Sikh Empire, since I'm from Punjab, and tried to find a way to dominate the Indian subcontinent, but of course that didn't go very well because I'm pretty bad at this stuff. However, you can try your hand at this task and many others that we'll be talking about in this video by checking out Victoria 3. Click the link in the description or pinned comment. The Victorian era was a pivotal point for the Islamic world. By 1837, large parts of the Islamic world were coming under European rule. While colonization had started in some regions, it was during this era that it was completed, and a majority of the Islamic world was brought under European influence. The Islamic world had been in decline since around the year 1700, as the Ottoman, the Safavid, and the Mughal empires, which had collectively controlled everything from Tunisia to India, had declined and were circling the drain. For the next century, the territories of the Ottomans and the Mughals were slowly rolled up by other empires, including European ones. The Safavids were safe from direct European control, but they fell due to internal problems. The Qajar dynasty took over Iran in 1789. By the end of the second Qajar ruler, Fateh Ali Shah Qajar's reign in 1834, Iran had lost two wars to Russia and had ceded significant territory to them and their ambition of expansion into the Caucasus and Central Asia. Similarly, Ottoman Egypt had fallen to Napoleon's invasion in 1798. The Russo-Turkish Wars forced them to withdraw from Crimea and Ukraine. The Greek Revolution of 1821 had allowed Greece to walk away, and the rest of the Ottoman territories in Europe began their own independent struggles. The Mughals in India had already been battered by the Iranians, the Afghans, and the Marathas. They lost to the British in 1764 and signed a treaty to let the British East India Company collect taxes in major provinces of the Mughal Empire. So, in short, by the time Queen Victoria ascended to the British throne, the Islamic world was in shambles. By the time she died, it was mostly under foreign control. Let's start in 1836, like Victoria III does, close to Europe in northwestern Africa. This region, commonly known as the Maghrib in the Islamic world, was of great importance to Europeans such as the British, the French, and the Spanish. After all, this region lies on the gateway between the Mediterranean Sea and the Atlantic Ocean. Due to their decline, the Ottomans weren't able to hold this region together. Morocco was under the control of the Alawite dynasty since 1631, but they were slowly coming under European influence. By the 1830s, the French had conquered a large portion of Algeria and were trying to expand into Morocco. They were facing resistance in Algeria by various tribal leaders, including the famous Emir Abdel Qadir. Abdel Qadir had fought valiantly and had delivered major defeats on the French, but ultimately he was pushed and escaped to Morocco to seek help from tribes there in 1844. This gave France the justification for attacking Morocco. Morocco lost that war and was forced to cede some territory and recognize French control over Algeria. As for Emir Abdelkader, he was forced to surrender in 1847, and Algeria was more or less secured for the French, who turned it into a colony and kept it till 1962. Morocco stayed independent, but due to instability, infighting, and economic problems like loans from other states to fund wars and inability to collect taxes, it fell under European influence and was officially turned into a French protectorate state in 1912. A similar thing happened in Tunisia, which was under nominal Ottoman control. The French didn't want the British or the Italians taking it, so they invaded in 1881 and took over to establish a colonial state, which remained till 1956. With the Maghreb secured by the French, Egypt was up for grabs. Egypt has always had a lot of significance for the empires that surround it. In 1798, Napoleon had conquered it, but the Ottoman Empire, with the help of the British, had expelled the French by 1801. An Albanian general known as Muhammad Ali Pasha had taken over as the governor of Egypt, although in all but name, he was the king of Egypt. By 1836, Muhammad Ali Pasha had established control over Egypt as well as parts of Sudan, Syria, and Arabia. However, Muhammad Ali's successors slowly fell under European influence. This also resulted in the creation of the Suez Canal, which was completed in 1869. Nice. Suez Canal was both a result of and an incentive for British interests in Egypt. However, many elements of the military and society resented the increasing European dominance of their country and turned against their rulers. As the country reached the brink of a civil war, the British and the French intervened and defeated the Egyptian army to establish their so-called veiled protectorate, which lasted till the First World War, when the British made the rulers of the Muhammad Ali dynasty throw away their nominal Ottoman overlordship and declare Egypt an independent sultanate. In all but name, it was a British colony and remained so till 1952. In 1952, a coup overthrew the monarchy and established the modern Egyptian Republic. To the east, Arabia was pretty normal during the Victorian era. The holy cities of Mecca and Medina were under nominal Ottoman control, and parts of Inner Arabia were fighting each other. There had been a first Saudi state, which was established in 1727. It fell in 1818. It's famous for its collaboration between the Saudis and the Wahhabis, which, interestingly, is still going on today. Then there was a second Saudi state, which fell in 1891, but came back a few decades later. However, to the south of the Arabian Peninsula, quite a lot was happening. Modern-day Oman and Yemen were on the vital trade route that had opened due to the Suez Canal from the Mediterranean Sea to the Indian Ocean. So the French and the British developed quite a rivalry for control of the southern coast of the Arabian Peninsula. In 1839, the British captured Aden in Yemen and established a colony there. Slowly, the British took over a majority of modern-day Yemen and claimed a protectorate there. Again, a colony in all but name. The British also dominated the Sultanate of Muscat and Oman. Similarly, the Trucial States in what is now the United Arab Emirates were established under the British Crown in 1820 as an informal protectorate. This remained till 1971 when the United Arab Emirates gained its independence. Toward the tail end of the Victorian era, the British controlled, officially or unofficially, the entire southern coast of the Arabian Peninsula, from the Persian Gulf to the Red Sea, and even parts of Somalia. By 1836, Iran was under the control of the Qajar dynasty. Russia was taking an interest in expanding into the Caucasus and Central Asia. Due to a couple of wars, Iran had to cede its Caucasian territory to them. By the 1880s, the Russians had taken over most of Central Asia and shared two borders with Iran, the Caucasus one and the Central Asian one. To the east, the British ruled the Indian subcontinent and unofficially controlled Afghanistan. The great game between Russia and the British played out in Iran as well. Both Russia and the British tried to dominate the Iranian monarchy. Iran relied on them both for loans and support, and people began seeing the monarchy as the puppet of the Europeans. So, in short, the British were angry that there was too much Russian control over the monarchy. The Russians were angry that there was too much British control over the monarchy. And finally, everyone was angry that there was too much British and Russian control over the monarchy. Although all wasn't bad in Iran during this time. It began to modernize quite a bit in the Victorian era. In 1906, the people forced a switch to a constitutional monarchy, but the parliament remained only till 1908, when the Shah overthrew it with the support of both the Russians and the British. Some habits die hard, I guess. In the 18th century, the Russians had expanded to the borders of Central Asia. They were slowly beginning to assert influence on the Kazakh Khanate. Various Khans put the Khanate under Russian protection, but by 1836, a large number of the former Kazakh territory was under Russian control. In the 1840s, they expanded and the Khanate fell in 1847. By the 1880s, they had taken over most of Islamic Central Asia. The British, over in India, were afraid of their influence expanding over Afghanistan and Iran next, and so the great game was afoot. To the west, the Ottoman Empire had lost territory in Ukraine and the Balkans, namely Greece, by 1836. In the 1870s and 80s, they lost further territory in the Balkans to independence. By the time of the First World War in 1914, the western border of the modern state of Turkey had been established, and the Ottoman Empire had lost most of its European assets. In Asia, there were other problems. After Napoleon's invasion in 1798, Egypt had slid out of Ottoman control. Not only Egypt, but everything in Africa was effectively out of Ottoman hands. Muhammad Ali Pasha, the aforementioned Ottoman governor of Egypt, started attacking Ottoman territories and expanding into Syria and Arabia. Internally, there were calls for improvement of the empire through modernization, and the first Ottoman constitution was put into effect in 1876, but that topic is a bit of a dumpster fire and it's really complicated, so I'll avoid that in this video. In short, the Ottoman Empire went from broken to broken beyond repair during the Victorian era. By the time Queen Victoria came to power, much of India was already under the control of the British East India Company. They had pushed against local powers and had installed themselves as the overlords of much of the subcontinent. However, during Victoria's reign, an important event happened there. In 1857, there was a local revolt against the East India Company. The revolt was crushed, but it also put a target on the company's back. The company was dissolved and its Indian territory was put directly under the control of the British Crown. Queen Victoria even took the title of the Empress of India without ever having stepped foot on the Indian subcontinent. To protect India from Russian encroachment, the British tried to contain their influence and keep Afghanistan as a buffer state between Russia in Central Asia and them in India. This led to the Great Game. During this period, the British and the Afghans fought two wars by 1880 when the British imposed their unofficial control over Afghanistan. Other parts of the Islamic world, such as the Horn of Africa and Southeast Asia, were also under foreign control by the end of the Victorian era. There was no major region of the Islamic world that was absolutely autonomous. The decline of the Islamic world from before the Victorian era and its occupation by foreign powers during the Victorian era contributed to a sense of a necessity for reform in the Islamic world. We saw various new movements appear, such as the Salafi movement and the Deobandi movement. Thinkers like Jamal ad-Din Afghani and Muhammad Abduh discussed the reasons for this decline and the need for Muslim unity and modernization to face these external threats while combating internal ones. Ideas like pan-Islamism and pan-Arabism were discussed quite a lot. The impact of these ideas was felt from the Ottoman Empire to British India. Many of these ideas remain relevant to the Islamic world even today. In many ways, the reaction of the Islamic world to European colonization was not very different than its reaction to the Mongol invasions. Of course, I'm not trying to draw a parallel between the Mongols and the Europeans, I'm only talking about the reaction of the Islamic world. In the same way as had during the Mongol invasions, many new interpretations of Islam were developed in this period. Some Puritan, some modernistic, and some extreme. A key factor in the colonization of the Islamic world was the economic influence of the Europeans, and not just a might-is-right approach. The Europeans had economic interests in many parts of the Islamic world and used economics in the form of loans and other means of financial support to dominate the leaders of the Islamic world. This is the most fascinating part of the story, in my opinion, and you can try your hand at it with Victoria 3, which deals with economic and social changes during the Victorian era with a great amount of complexity and nuance. See if you can change the events of world history. Again, the link is in the description and in the pinned comment. See you next time. Don't forget to subscribe and press the bell icon. On the screen right now, you can see the names and tiers of the patrons. You can join them by pledging a dollar or more to support the channel. Thank you for watching.